Let's freaking go. Who is the better quarterback between Garrett Nussmeier and Jackson Dart? I want you to give me your answer in the live chat. If you're watching this via iTunes, Spotify, or YouTube, give it a five-star review. Also, one NFL draft sleeper when it comes to first-round hype and why it is a very big deal. That's all coming up, baby. Let's go.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Let me think, I'm getting the power. It's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the field. Yeah. Terror of the tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Let me think, I'm getting the power. It's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power.
Let's freaking go. So I want to show you Garrett Nussmeier's stats. If you're listening to this via pod, 1,652 passing yards, 15 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and the 12th best QBR in the nation. As many of you know, we are huge ESPN QBR fans, and this has only been through 5 games. What's even more ridiculous is Garrett has thrown for 300 or more yards in 4 of 5 games. He has thrown for at least 280 in 5 of 5 games. And this is with a really inconsistent LSU rushing attack to start the season. Now, when it comes to raw passing yardage, if you have a bad rushing attack, it can help your total passing yardage number, but still, it's impressive knowing that the defense knows you're throwing and also knowing that you are not a rush threat at all. Garrett Nussmeier has been this freaking good as a thrower. Now, one very interesting thing, and this stat is still very much alive for the Garrett Nussmeier believers out there, and you could go back on Twitter and see our super deep dive on this very thing. Please go give us a follow at Power Hour LSU. Garrett Nussmeier has still never had a positive rushing yard rush attempt versus a Power 5 opponent. I know that sounds like an absolutely ridiculous stat, but it is indeed true. All his rushing attempts, taking sacks out, have come against non-Power 5 teams. So could we see Garrett Nussmeier tuck and run? I think you can, because Ole Miss's pass rush, they are very aggressive getting upfield. So rushing lane opportunities could present itself to Garrett Nussmeier in this game. But truth be told, I want you in the chat right now. Tell me, who is the better quarterback? It's okay if you are an LSU fan and you think Jackson Dart is better. Now, what I want you to do is just in your mind right now, try and guess Jackson Dart's stat line. Would you say it is better or worse than Garrett Nussmeier's this season? We say hi to Savage Tiger Fan. We say hi to Dex, Lisi Dex. We say hi to LA Mom. Zach is in the building. He is a longtime PHLer. He knows all about the back-to-back road game stat. I do believe it's a little flawed, though, for LSU. We'll talk about that coming up. Gabe is actually not a super diehard LSU fan. He is actually a huge Jackson Dart fan. So there you go. Tony, hang tough. It's going to get better, of course. Chance says Garrett Nussmeier is the better pro prospect. So you see 1,652, 15 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, QBR of 84. So I got into a pretty intense debate last night with my dear beloved friend Blake Ruffino, and he and I kind of disagreed on Ole Miss's offense this year. He thinks Ole Miss's offense is a little misleading judging by the level of competition. But you do see here that Jackson Dart has better stats than Garrett Nussmeier to a certain extent, right? He's played one more game. Nuss has played, of course, a bye week. You see Jackson Dart, 2,100 passing yards, 13 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, and a slightly better QBR. Now, what I would also say about QBR, it does favor quarterbacks who can run just a little bit more. But still, you see Jackson Dart, like Garrett Nussmeier, has put up 300 yards passing in pretty much every game that he's played. But you do see that Garrett has played a far tougher schedule. And in recent weeks, South Carolina and Kentucky, these defenses, of course, are better than the soft ones that he played at the beginning of the season. One other thing about Jackson Dart, when you look at total statistics, Ole Miss plays a far more frantic pace. So when you play at a faster pace, guess what? You're going to run more plays, thus meaning you're going to have better stats than practically everyone. So as you can see, Jackson Dart has been playing really, really well. Or has he? You know, you take a look at his rushing numbers. Of course, he gives you something as a runner. That's something Garrett Nussmeier doesn't give you at all. What I would also say about that, though, is Jackson Dart isn't some dynamic runner. I would actually put his rushing ability on the same level. And I could even make a case that this guy is a better rusher than Jackson Dart, and that is Joe Burrow, right? You can make a case that Jackson Dart is probably like a Danny Etling level runner. He's a good runner, not a special runner. And as you can see, they do use him in the red zone. He has 3 rushing touchdowns on the season. And I think his running ability is actually going to be used a little bit more in this game, considering Ole Miss's running back room hasn't been what you would expect. Now, Julie, with our first Super Chat of the evening, it is a very interesting Super Chat. Who do I feel had a better game versus South Carolina? And the answer is, beyond reasonable doubt, Garrett Nussmeier. Garrett, of course, made more mistakes, more game-breaking mistakes, 2 pick sixes, both of which were called back for penalties. So, yes, that is indeed true. But the funny thing is they actually threw for the exact same total amount of yards, right? Jackson Dart threw for 285 against South Carolina. We can go ahead and go back here. And Garrett Nussmeier versus South Carolina also threw for 285 yards. Of course, Dart gave you something as a runner. And at the same time, Garrett Nussmeier threw 40 times. Jackson Dart in this game threw 27 times. So Dart had the more explosive pass plays go in his favor, but he also had 44 yards rushing. So who had the better game versus South Carolina? I would probably still lean Garrett Nussmeier, even though statistically Dart was better. The explosive pass plays were there for him. You see the QBR is 90.5 for him. And then for Garrett Nussmeier, his QBR versus South Carolina was 76.0. Once again, QBR does lean in favor of quarterbacks who can run. But yes, Garrett Nussmeier, lots of mistakes in that game. They both had great games. The difference, and I tend to weight this a little bit more in the QB equation, is Garrett needed to play at the level he played for LSU to win. Jackson Dart could have had a off day and Ole Miss still would have found a way to win that game. Okay. So there you go. We say hi to Christopher. We say hi to Jalen. What's good? Everybody, please like and share. Good to see Volcano in here from the SEC channel. Welcome in. We welcome in fans of all backgrounds. Now, why do I bring up, is Jackson Dart overrated? Well, some would say that this schedule for Jackson Dart has not been that tough. And the Kentucky game was not good for him really at all. It was mostly the number 9 show, the Trey Harris show, and he's been banged up as of late for Ole Miss. We sided Dexter. What's good, man? So, look, Jackson Dart's a more well-rounded quarterback. Where I give Garrett one big advantage is he hasn't had as many snaps as Jackson Dart. I mean, this is still Garrett's first full year as a starter. Jackson Dart, this is his third year in Lane's system on top of a lot of experience at USC. So, do I think Jackson Dart is overrated? No, I think he's playing just fine. Has he exceeded expectations this year? No. Has he fell short of expectations this year? Maybe so. We really can't answer that until they play tougher teams, though. The Kentucky game was not good. It statistically looked okay. A lot of those yards came on a fourth down heave to Priest-Corn down the field, and another came on a 4th-and-7 pass attempt where Trey Harris did most of the work. So that game was tough, and then 51% completion percentage versus South Carolina. So Dart, when playing against teams with an actual pulse, it's been interesting, to say the least. Now, I want to talk about an LSU NFL draft sleeper. This happens a lot with LSU football. Every year, there are players who are clear-cut first-rounders. And we go into the season knowing that despite an act of God, or unless there is an act of God, they're going to be in the first round of the NFL draft, right? So take someone like Malik Nabers. We knew he was going to be a first-round pick. Will Campbell, I'm pretty certain he's going to fall in the first round. Now, going into the season, you take a look at most NFL draft big boards. Harold Perkins was firmly in the first round, and now that's probably not going to happen with the injury. So, who is the other first rounder? Well, it was Emory Jones. Emory Jones, I haven't seen him in as many first round mocks, but I still see him in the first round of a lot of big boards. But the guy who is making a move is Braden Swenson. So one of my favorite Twitter accounts is a guy by the name of James Foster. He goes by No Flags Film, and he is not afraid to take a stand. Now, I haven't had much time to look at this. I saw it this morning, and I found it to be interesting. James is definitely one of the more neutral draft analysts out there, okay? Which means he's not going to gas up a player just for gassing a guy up. There are some draft analysts who have contacts with agencies, and, well, their judgment of a player might change your actual draft stock compared to who they are actually as a player. James Foster isn't some big draft analyst. He is a really damn good one. And something else I really like about James Foster, and I've reached out to him, didn't get a response, because I love this guy. Like, as a football analyst, film analyst, I envy this guy. Like, he is so good at this stuff, especially now that I've ventured more into the NFL. What James Foster did this offseason was really revolutionary. He went through and evaluated every single NFL edge player. So from TJ Watt to Hassan Reddick and so on and so on. And he broke down every single pass rush that all these players did. And he broke them down by swim moves, rip moves, bull rushes, all this stuff. And you guys know, as a former defensive lineman, especially as a former pass rusher, that is my favorite thing. It is something that I feel like I have as good a knowledge as someone who's that's not been in the league, right? I'm not Brandon Jordan or anyone like that, but this was as detailed as I've ever seen. So I say that because you could tell this guy has a passion for edge prospects, and he sees things and evaluates things at an extremely high level. So I looked at his first round mock today. He had Braden Swenson in the first round. And why is that important? Well, a lot of teams like younger players. They don't like seeing a late dominator score. Why? Because if you dominate competition, especially at an athleticism position like defensive end, as a year five guy, it's not as impressive as if you do it as a year three guy or a year two guy or as a true freshman. But it is some signal that this guy who knows so much about pass rushing, knows how to evaluate it, has my stamp of approval. He didn't need it, but I do have his. I do love this guy. I looked at his first round mock. It just came across. I was shocked to see Braden Swenson on there. I'm not shocked in the sense that he's played well, but I could see NFL teams being like, well, he's breaking out here versus competition that hasn't been the absolute best, and he's a year five guy. But that is really good news for Braden Swenson, a guy who is grinded through, different defensive line coaches, not only here, but at Oregon, transfers over, and is having this amazing, amazing, amazing season, which lends ourselves into the next topic. We have not had a first-round defensive lineman in a few years, right? No, we had Mason Smith last year. He was second round. B.J. Ojulari, second round. It's still really good. He's had Wingo and Jordan Jefferson get drafted last year. But if Braden Swenson was to take a catapultistic leap into the first round of the NFL draft, that is a stamp of approval on the MVP of this coaching staff, which is Kevin Peoples. All right. So I wanted to show some love to Brain Swenson. I know a lot of you don't care about the NFL draft. I do. I actually really care about LSU's players at the next level because it's good branding for the school. And I actually do like these players personally, and I do want them to do well. Whether you're Joe Burrow, who, by the way, is the number one quarterback in adjusted EPA per play in the entire NFL right now. And if you are Devon Godchow, kind of a forgotten player, or Foster Moreau, who scored a touchdown, I care for each and every player when they get to the next level. It broke my heart today that Devin White got cut. But, man, I'm so freaking excited for Brain Swenson. I'm so freaking excited. Okay? Now, we'll move on. Can we trust the LSU offensive coordinator to call a great game? So let's have a conversation about Joe Sloan. Because if Joe Sloan was sitting right here, he would tell you, hey, everyone, we are number one in all of college football in adjusted explosive play rate. We're number two in SP plus offense. But we all know the play calling has been kind of a mixed bag. And a lot of our offensive success is due to the brilliance of Garrett Nussmeier and our really good wide receiver room. And honestly, a lot of our offensive success and our explosive play rate is because of one person, number 29. So I am really freaking excited about Caden Durham this weekend. I think Joe Sloan's going to call a great game. I like it when young OCs get the opportunity of having 2 weeks to prepare. I think Sloan and the LSU offense will have a good day. Now, is Ole Miss's defense really good? Yeah, they're really good. They're really, really, really good. But have they played an offense as good as LSU's? No. Now, what I would also tell you, and I do think this is very, very important in the grand scheme of things, this is something LA Mom has brought up in the Discord. By the way, please go join us, patreon.com/LSU football. Neither of these teams have really been tested. All right. After Ole Miss played this weekend, you can make a strong case that Ole Miss has been more tested because they don't get the benefit of having this bye week. But both of these teams have not played what you would consider to be good schedules or some of the stronger schedules, right? LSU played USC. USC is still a good team, but, you know, they lost to a very flawed Michigan team, and we saw what happened this past weekend. How good are they? We really don't know. And then the South Carolina result is looking worse by the day. It just is. But, you know, outside of that, LSU has played a really flawed UCLA team and two non-power fives. And then we get to Ole Miss. Ole Miss played the weakest first couple of weeks in all of college football with Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, and Georgia Southern. Missouri also had a soft opening, but Vanderbilt and Boston College turned out to be better teams than any team Ole Miss played in the first 4 weeks. And then Kentucky and South Carolina, those are good teams. Ole Miss lost to Kentucky. They got outplayed. And South Carolina, how good are they? Well, we do have one common opponent, obviously South Carolina. We both played them in South Carolina. We both played them in a day game. We beat South Carolina 33-30 with a hurt quarterback on the other team, and they dominated South Carolina 27-3. So per transitive property, you would have to give Ole Miss the slight advantage, right? Sportsbooks, of course, opening this bad boy up. Ole Miss favored 3. Tari, thank you for the very generous super chat here. It goes a freaking long way. And Tari, congratulations. Shoot me an email. I am going to send you an LSU card. PowerHourLSU@gmail.com. So there you go. Let's go to Brian. What's the real scoop on Hilton? And is Caden fully ready to do all the things? So, Caden Durham did indeed hurt his foot. I am of the belief that it wasn't serious. But I really don't do much injury searching until the injury report is released later this week. And as far as Chris Hilton is concerned, my understanding is that he's going to play. But I am done guessing with this. I do think, Brian, the bigger story, and this has been kind of cryptic, and I've been also a little cryptic about this as well. What is the status of CJ Daniels? So I shared last week that I had been informed that there was some more injuries on the team that wasn't as public, and then started leaking out just a little bit that CJ could be banged up. But let's be fair here. We don't know. Brian Kelly was asked about it earlier this week, and he says he is expecting CJ to practice and go through everything. I don't know. It's kind of a weird situation there. I think CJ Daniels is a far bigger loss than Chris Hilton. But Chris Hilton, of course, is a very solid player, and it would be very nice to have him back. So we'll see, and we'll react when the injury report is released later this week. Let's go to S. Young, and then we'll go to Jared Super Chat. And Tari, don't forget, you get to pick the next topic. LSU's offensive line better stop the Ole Miss defensive line, who has the most sacks in the country. Yes. Very good Super Chat here. Okay. And we'll get to Jared's. Now, does Ole Miss have the most sacks in the country? They do. They're a really good sacking defensive line. Now, why are they a good sacking defensive line? Because they're a good defensive line. Their defensive line is probably better than ours, especially on paper going into the season. I do think LSU's defensive line has played better than expectation, which is pretty much all we can ask for. That group has been very well coached across the way. Now, why do they have so many sacks? Well, Princely has been a really good player. He's had good games versus us. Number one for Florida is now the same jersey number for Ole Miss. He's been dealing with injuries. It also helps having guys like Trey Amos on the back end. They have good blitzing linebackers and Chris Poupon. You know, I referenced this on Blake's show, but Chris Poupon ate us alive 2 years ago in Fayetteville. I mean, we just could not block him on blitzes. And he's been a really good player for Ole Miss. Then you have Ivy 15, who's been a really good player for Ole Miss as well. Pegues is their Wildcat quarterback as well. Big 300-pound defensive tackle, is a former tight end. Really good player, number 89. And then, of course, the guy with the most hype is Walter Nolan, the former number one overall recruit, five-star transfer from A&M, and he's been good. I mean, the numbers haven't been, like, phenomenal, but he's been very effective, which makes sense. He was effective at Texas A&M. You wouldn't expect much of a difference at Ole Miss unless he just, you know, didn't take care of himself at all, which he clearly has. So this is a very good group. Now, this is where I would push back just a little bit, Ash Young, all right? Ole Miss has not played a pass-blocking offensive line as good as LSU's, all right? Kentucky's offensive lines over the years have actually been okay, right? You know, it's different, though, when you're on the road with a first-year starter in Brock Vandegrift, who's been sitting the bench. And by the way, sack avoidance isn't anything that you can really work on in practice. It's, in fact, near impossible to work on that in practice because you can't hit the quarterback. You can't ever actually have full speed reps. So Brock Vandegrift is a relatively sackable quarterback. Same is true with South Carolina's quarterbacks. They're young. They're not, you know, the most thorough throwers of the football. Now, they can really scoot, as can Vandegrift. Very sackable quarterbacks. And on top of that, Ole Miss has built huge leads versus these bad teams that they played. Furman, Middle Tennessee, Wake Forest, and Georgia Southern. When you build big leads, guess what? You can pin your ears back and get after it. But the one thing we underrate this year is LSU's pass blocking has been fine. It hasn't been what I would consider elite like we expected going into the season, but it's been really good. And Garrett Nussmeier is one of the best pressure to sack ratio quarterbacks we have ever seen in college football. Like ever. This guy does not get sacked. He's been sacked a total of 8 times in his career. 5 of those came as a true freshman. Last 2 seasons, he has given up 2 sacks combined, and those were both on the road versus South Carolina, where they had a big lead and they could pin their ears back. And by the way, South Carolina's got 2 defensive ends that'll both eventually get drafted. And Garrett was pressured quite a bit in that South Carolina game, and he was still able to get the ball off in time. So what we tend to think about when it comes to sacks, we tend to immediately think it's on the offensive line, but sacks have a lot to do with the quarterback. And could Garrett Nussmeier very well have a sack day and have 2 sacks versus Ole Miss? Yeah, because they have a really good defensive line. And over the past couple seasons, Ole Miss has jumped out on leads versus us. But this is the best quarterback that they have played by far. Now, this is one of the few like pure pocket quarterbacks that they have faced, which as a pass rusher excites you, because Garrett Nussmeier's not going to be able to run away from these Ole Miss defensive ends. But Garrett Nussmeier just does not get sacked. That is a QB stat. As I've gotten older and offenses have become more advanced, I have put 70% on sacks on the quarterback. And then 30% on the play call, play design, and the offensive line, or just the overall protection. Okay. It's so much more a quarterback stat now, especially with audibles and changing up protections and all those things. Okay. Jared, thank you for the super. I really appreciate it so much. Live stream's been lit tonight. It has been so freaking lit. I love this. You can feel the juice. You can feel it coming in the air tonight. Let's go. Let's freaking go. Now, coming up next. We will get to Tari's question here. And it's a very good one on Garrett Nussmeier. Should we be worried about the turnovers? I actually made a joke about this earlier today, and we'll talk about it next. Book your 360 spin booth experience today with Zion Imaging. Yes, that's my buddy Jaron Thomas, who started this venture years ago. And look at the smiles on these faces. This state-of-the-art photo booth is so incredible. I work in the wedding and event industry, and anytime I see a 360 photo booth, it takes your event, whether it's a reunion, a wedding, a conference, no matter what it is, it takes it to another level. Give them a follow on Facebook. Book them today. There is a special deal going on now where you can get up to 40% off. This is all the info. Give them a call today, 318-469-4265, or go to Zion Imaging. That's xyanimaging.com. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top 5 pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. We shout out Wade and we go to Tari's super chat. Yeah, Garrett, here's the thing, and I will repeat this to the high heavens. All right. There is not a better quarterback to play for as a wide receiver than Garrett Nussmeier, because it is impossible for a quarterback to have more passing attempts than Garrett Nussmeier. He doesn't run. He doesn't take sacks. So what does that mean? He's passing the football the maximum amount of times. No tucking and running. He's looking to throw. And it drives me crazy. There are times when sacks are good. All right, I don't want to get into the film of sacks that he should have taken this year. And there are times when he gets some interception luck, right? Turnover-worthy play percentage. But Garrett should throw it away. Garrett should take more sacks. And Garrett should take off and run a lot more often. So I do not like when Nuss tries to force things and force the issue, okay? And one thing I think gets him in trouble as well is throw to the guys that are making plays, right? There was a throw in this past week's game that he tried, I'd say this past week, but the week before his game, obviously South Alabama, where he tried to fit an extremely difficult throw into Kyle Parker. Now, could Kyron have caught this ball and would those two have had better chemistry to connect on it? Sure. But ask yourself, is a low percentage throw to Kyle Parker in the red zone the better option, or a 4 or 5 yard scramble, which was presented itself to Garrett Nussmeier? He would have gained at least that amount. Yeah, you want to take those 4 and 5 yards, right? So, yes, you're right, Tari. There are times when he tries to do too much. But here's my issue with people that complain about Garrett Nussmeier's turnovers is – we act like turnovers is the only aspect of quarterback play that matters, all right? Let's take Kyron Lacy, for instance. Kyron has started having the drop issues. He's had some really bad drops. 2 in the UCLA game, 1 was particularly terrible, and then he had 1 this past weekend versus South Alabama. Are they terrible drops? Yes. Do we want him dropping those passes? Absolutely not. But do we want to bench Kyron Lacy because of the drops? No. Why? Because he makes plays that makes up for it, right? That was always my big issue with Kyron Lacy because, you know, when I would criticize him when he had the drops versus A&M, there was someone that I know that goes to practice every single day, and they would say, hey, Carter, you know, Kyron in practice kills it. Like, he absolutely kills it. I was like, well, I don't care. The drops that he would have – did not justify him playing. But now, if Kyron gives me a drop a game, but on top of a drop a game, I'm still getting 10 catches, 80 yards, and a tutty per game, or 11 catches for 130 and no tutties, I will take that trade-off every single time, okay? Now, we would like to go back to 0 drops, which he essentially had before the UCLA game. But you take that into equation. With Garrett Nussmeier, the INTs are part of the package. Because we're not a great running team. So if we're not a great running team, guess what? That's more weight on Garrett Nussmeier's shoulders. And if we know Garrett is not a quarterback who ever takes off and runs, that means the maximum amount of throws are going to be had throughout the course of a game. Well, if you have such a high throw rate and such a high dropback rate, turnovers are the trade-off for that, right? That's a big benefit of having Jaden Daniels as your quarterback. There's just not going to be turnovers because he's not going to risk risky throws because he has a lot more wiggle room because of his athleticism. And his overall experience is far superior than pretty much every college quarterback and pretty much every young quarterback that we have ever seen in the NFL. 9 years of snaps going into his NFL season, dating back to high school. 9 years. He had a decade worth of snaps. So, you know, that's why I tweeted out that LeBron graphic when, you know, I hate it when people – just focus in on the INTs. So like Garrett's going to throw us out of a game. So what? He's won us games too. Are we in the South Carolina game at all without Garrett Nussmeier and those ridiculous throws he made in the game? We are not. we are thrown off the field. So, yeah, I mean, those mistakes are going to happen. Sure. Now, Carvis makes a really good point. The timing of Garrett Nussmeier's turnovers and the types of the turnovers are the ones you don't want to see. You arm punt an INT on third and Jerusalem. It happens. Okay? If it's third and Timbuktu and you're just trying to force a ball into Kyren into double coverage and it gets picked, sure. If we're down 17 and it's fourth in Europe, chunk it up there, right? There's a lot of Tennessee fans that would have loved to have Garrett Nussmeier as a quarterback, especially on the final play, because there is never a world where Garrett Nussmeier is just running out of bounds like Nico did this past weekend and not giving a guy a chance to make a play. So it's a really good point. And Carvis has always been really good about this. It's not just what happens. It's why it happens. It's how it happens. It's when it happens. It's where it happens. And I think so many people bring up the South Carolina mistakes because of when they happen. And they were at rough times in the game. First drive of the game, pick six. Game-winning drive of the game, pick six. Then you have another opportunity. Turnover-worthy play. Hail Mary at the end of the first half, nobody cares. So that is one valid criticism. Gary can throw you out of a game. He can throw that game-sealing pick. We've already seen him do it. But that's the trade-off. That is the trade-off. And I'm taking that trade-off all day, every day. I am. Because you're in a situation now, if Caden Durham never emerged, and if Swinson and Savion aren't having the seasons that they're having, then you're probably really putting on Garrett Nussmeier to go out there and win the game. But it's whatever. Now, that was an all-time miss. That was an all-time miss. I am still not going to fully criticize Nuss or Aaron or anyone on that play until someone specifically asked them about the play, because it was kind of bizarre. But I want Garrett to be aggressive because we need him to be. Now, here's the difference. Let's say LSU is really able to run the football in this game versus Ole Miss. And what we expected LSU to be offensively is what we see. Well, guess what? Then Garrett needs to limit all turnovers because you're no longer the reason that we're having success, right? We don't want you committing turnovers if we have a lead or if we're running the football effectively or if the underneath stuff is really working. We don't want you to do that. Now, we're going to talk more about this tomorrow going into the Ole Miss game. I might do a preview film study and release it maybe tomorrow or on Thursday. I do want to talk a little bit about the defensive matchup versus Dart. You know, the beginning of this was so Dart-focused. Really, the best offensive player in this game is Trey Harris, the wide receiver. And like if Malik Nabers was sitting here right now, he would tell you the same thing, right? Trey Harris is really him. I would say he is a slightly better player than Kyren Lacy. The two are very similar, but Trey Harris is the best receiver in the SEC. The most important receiver in the SEC is also Trey Harris. The complimentary pieces for Ole Miss have not, you know, been as good as some would think. And LSU's complimentary pieces, like an Aaron Anderson, has been a lot better. You know, Aaron's been one of the biggest surprises this year in the SEC with how dominant he's been and how consistent he's been. But this will be a matchup between two really good tight ends, Priest Korn, 86, obviously Mason Taylor, 86, They're both just really good football players, very similar football players as well. But as good as Trey Harris is, one guy that's really going to have a lot on his plate is Greg Penn. Greg Penn has a lot on his plate. Okay? So, Greg Penn versus Ole Miss has always been kind of tough. So, you go back to 2021. He's a true freshman. They forced him to play, and he's not ready. All right? Obviously, that season overall was a disaster. And Greg Penn had a tough game. He's a true freshman playing in a bad system. 2022, obviously, Harold Perkins just kind of took over that game. If I remember correctly, I don't think he played too much. And then last year in 2023, back at Oxford, Greg Penn had a hellacious game. It was tough. And he was one of many LSU players that was slipping like crazy on Ole Miss's field. I don't know exactly why, but we struggled keeping our footing. And I think part of why our tackling in that game in particular is so bad is because of the footing. Now, it doesn't excuse it. It is still the single worst LSU defensive performance tackling-wise I can remember. But Greg Penn really had issues in that Ole Miss game. But now he is playing the best football of his career. And I do think Whit Weeks is a better fit alongside him. Okay. So as great as Harold Perkins has been, in particular against Ole Miss a few years ago as a true freshman, he went out there and really shut them down in the second half of that game. This is not the Perk game, right? Perk isn't the best fit versus a team that puts a lot of stress on the linebackers with a lot of misdirections and so on and so on. So last week, our versus South Alabama, a team that is hard to play linebacker against, have a really good dual threat quarterback. Major Applewhite's a really good play caller, and their running backs are really good. I mean, their running backs will both probably move on and play Power 5 football next year. We had the best off-ball linebacker performance we can remember of this season. Greg Penn got the game ball. Whit Weeks got the post-game interview. So, what's very interesting about this matchup, from a football nerd perspective, not even from an LSU perspective, let's say that Greg Penn and Whit Weeks plays just as well as they did versus South Alabama. The likelihood of that happening is very low because this matchup is so much more tough than the South Alabama matchup. But let's just say that they both play a lot better and they actually both play really well. Then you could start bringing up the question, maybe the LSU defense is better off with not having to worry about where Harold Perkins' best fit is in the entire defense. And I've theorized this for a while now, and it's always kind of a tricky subject because we know Harold Perkins as this ridiculously talented football player. But one thing, and I have plenty of episodes, you can go back and look at it. I wish there's an easy way I can go back and look at all the episodes. One thing that we underrate about what was on Matt House's plate, outside of the defensive line coach moving and Omar Spates having hip issues and all of that, the constant struggle of the linebacker coach, who also happened to be the defensive coordinator, trying to figure out what Harold Perkins' best defined role is in this defense, because it wasn't necessarily the easiest thing to figure out. You know, his role was so unfreaking believably unique as a true freshman that it's hard to figure out what your best permanent role is on an every down to down basis. So, you know, it's from a football nerd perspective, if the LSU linebackers play really well and our defense plays well, maybe it's that we weren't starting the right linebackers. It's out of Shorty. Sam says, I went back and watched your film study from last year. We look like ice skaters. Yeah. I mean, it was a lot of slipping. Now, I will say Malik slipped a lot in that game. He always had kind of slipping issues. But yeah, we really struggled just staying on our feet. Now, one player who I think could play a lot more, and he took over Greg Penn's number 30, is Xavier Debo Atkins. Okay. Ole Miss is a tough game for any true freshman linebacker. I still think Debo can play. I do. I really, really, really do. Okay. Now, Carvis, for my own mental health tonight, unless someone super chats this, I do not want to talk about our secondary going up against their receivers. I want to save something for tomorrow's episode because I am not sure I'm ready to share my opinions on that. And I'm not so sure if it's the wide receiver matchup stuff that that concerns me the most. Okay? Let's go to Pegasus this year. Yeah, that's a mismatch. It just is. You know, it's a second-year player going up against a guy that's going to get drafted pretty high next year. And Chester's had some issues. DJ Chester's going to be a really good center. Center is really hard for a year two player to be really good at. The Master Blaster coming in hot with the $20 super chat. Matt should get to pick the next topic, go right on ahead. But for my mental health, I am not going to talk about the LSU secondary going up against Ole Miss's players. I will talk about DJ Chester, though. Up and down year. Most important thing, though, about DJ Chester that I love is the snaps are on target. Snaps are on target. Okay? Second thing. I did not want Gary Dellinger to play center. All right? If I were to rank the offensive line based on performance this year, Gary Dellinger would probably be number one. Now, the truth is Will Campbell's probably number one. But relative to season expectations, Gary Dellinger has been that good. Will's been our best offensive lineman, though. We need the right side of our offensive line to step up. I think Emory will. Miles Frazier, we'll see what happens. Once again, Miles Frazier in particular had some tough blocks versus Chris Poupon. In the 22 Arkansas matchup, Poupon's a really good player, number 11, their linebacker. Chester, I am worried about, right? Pegues and Nolan, those guys are good DTs. They have good DTs up the middle. Okay. Tony wants to know who's going to the game. Well, I will say I did have a viewer, Jay Bird, reach out. They're trying to find tickets. Longtime viewer, big shout out to Jay Bird. So I'm not going. I am not going because I'm going to Fayetteville the next week. I wish I was going. But there's also a piece of me that's happy I'm not going because it is such a big college football weekend The funny thing is the next week is pretty big as well. It really is big. Arkansas, big week. And then, you know, you get Georgia and Texas. Are you kidding me? Go. Now, what happened to you, Blue Fetty? What do you mean, what's happening? What's happening? Are you asking me what's happening? What's up? Oh, man. Yeah, I met Brandon Stokely a few, a few years ago, I met Brandon Stokely. Let's go to Harrison M. If you can have any one former LSU player from any point in history to play for us this weekend, which player would it be? Ooh. Yeah, honestly, I mean, you know, you can't say Joe Burrow or someone like that. I mean, that's just too damn easy. So, obviously, if you're ranking him, it would be a tied for first between Joe Burrow and Jaden Daniels, right? Because, you know, there's just so much value in the quarterback. But that's not fun. The truth is, the answer is probably Patrick Peterson because, like, I could trust him in Mann versus Trey Harris, and then that would force Dart to have to find other guys. So, and that's the he's Dart's going to spread the football around some, but he's been very force feedy to Trey Harris. By the way, Trey Harris might not even be fully healthy for this game, whatever the case may be. Normally, the answer to this question is Patrick Peterson. Nah, it just always is for me because I do think he's the best LSU football player of this era. But Joe, Jaden in either order, and then Patrick Peterson. There you go. Great minds think alike. Yeah, it's him, Patrick Peterson, or Honey Badger. The one thing I would say about the one reason I could potentially pick Patrick Peterson over Tyron, obviously Tyron's peak is probably a little bit better, a little bit more explosive. But, you know, maybe Lane could find a way to scheme around like his blitzes and all of that. With Patrick Peterson, I know I could just fit him in and he doesn't need to know the system. You just tell him, hey, we want you to play corner. And we just want you to shut down that half of the field. And that gives our other guys matchup advantages. You know, part of the greatness of Tyron Matthew is that, you know, we had Darryl Simon and Mo Claiborne. So even if you tried to get rid of the football down quickly, it was clamps. And the year before that, when Tyron was elite, it was Patrick Peterson out there, Eric Reed and those guys. So Patrick Peterson would make Major Burns a serviceable player. You would.
Because we could put a safety solely over a slot fade and play quarter half, or just play split field, not quarter half. I would honestly just let Patrick Peterson guard two guys. And then that way we for sure wouldn't get burned. He was that good.
Yeah, junior year before the cut block, Glenn Dorsey wouldn't be a bad one either. That's true, Bill. Another thing is the return game with the Honey Badger, but once again, Patrick Peterson was a great returner as well. So Tommy Castanova, that's not a bad one. Devin White, yeah, true. But if I wasn't picking a quarterback, it would need to be a member of the secondary for this team. Okay. And I think, well, you could also make a case for someone like Chad Jones, right? A deep safety who's going to keep everything in front and also make a spectacular play. Because at this point, you know, many of us would say the safety room is a little bit a bigger question than the corner room. But almost every time I get asked this question, it's the answer is probably going to be Patrick Peterson. Brandon Taylor wouldn't be bad either. But if Brandon Taylor was sitting here, you would say Peterson, Claiborne, or Tyron. He'd probably say one of those three guys. Let's see, who in particular was an Ole Miss killer? Odell. Punt return versus Ole Miss won us that game. So there you go. Oh, Billy, yeah, my thoughts are with you. Obviously, you know, I did my Tennessee show earlier today, and, you know, that region of the country is going through it with the mudslides and everything. And it hurts. I do a show on the nooffseason.com network. So obviously I'm affiliated with No Offseason with Power Hour now, but No Offseason, I actually do a show on their network every Tuesday at 11 a.m. And my co-host is based in Tampa. So I said, hey, let's just cancel the show today. He was like, no, we've already evacuated. We're in Georgia. And the show is a nightmare. The Wi-Fi, he's in some cabin in Georgia with his family. And I mean, he's taking it really well. Obviously, you know, it's tough. It's really, really, really tough. So, yeah, I guess it is morally responsible if I do have some type of platform to say this. If you've not evacuated and you're in an area where they told you to evacuate, get the hell out of there. You're not – it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Even if you have the absolute most flood-proof house, you're not going to have power. And that could take weeks. It could take months for you to get your power back. And it's also, for people that actually sat through and dealt with actual hurricanes during Katrina, the hurricane itself is scary, right? Because Mother Nature can take you out. But even if that isn't to happen, it's the fear, right? It's the fear when the storm's passing through and hear the winds, electricity's out. Is it worth your mental health of being in the middle of something like that, which essentially turns itself into a war zone? Is it worth that? So if you are watching this and you've not evacuated, I guess I should say you should go.
All right, but you do you. All right. Now, Carvis is in Orlando. It's tough. I mean, everyone's got their reasons for staying or going. This was interesting to me. There's another friend I know who has a friend. His wife and kids evacuated, but he decided to stay back. This works from home, and he could have evacuated, but he's like, no, I don't believe it's anything. I don't believe in science or whatever. Okay. And I don't, obviously don't know the guy. It's a friend of a friend. And I was like, man, that's crazy. That is misinformation to another level. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be devastating. I mean, it's just going to be sad where it's going to be a sucky next couple of weeks. And it's kind of hard to escape football now with all this stuff going on. But, you know, it's tough. But by the way, if you are watching this, for the next few minutes, if you went through Katrina, if you've been through bad weather, and obviously we have some people watching that are going through it, share some tips or anything that you could tell them in these next 24 hours before, you know, all hell breaks loose here. Okay. Let's go to Sibley with the super chat. A Tats for All in 1908. LSU went 10-0 and was declared the natty. LSU administrator turned it down because Tulane complained. Will you help with the campaign to recapture natty number 5? I know nothing of this. All right. I did recently see, though, did y'all see this graphic with all the all the old SEC matchups. What was it? There are some crazy ones on there. I don't know. I'd have to go find the graphic. You guys, some of you have seen it, like who some of these teams played in like 1856. Bill, okay, this is a good one, Bill. Bill says, write your name on your arm with the Sharpie so they can identify you. That's kind of a bleak one, but do it. Sibley, this is a funnier one. No, I was not there during this. Oh, man. Sure, Sibley, I have your back in 1908. It's crazy that is 99 years before the 07 Natty. That is so long ago. And sure, I'm with you, Sibley. I will sign the petition. Put my name on there. Okay, so I'm in, Sibley. I'm in. Let's go to Epic Shorty. I have another question about, my red drink. Okay, type Y for yes if you liked our comedian guest on Sunday. I know that's like a totally random guest. I know Jared loved him. Nick's super funny. How do you clean your cup? Because the flavor is stuck in my cup when I just put water in it. That's the thing. I only drink Red Punch out of this cup. This used to be Haley's cup, and she used to drink Red Punch out of it. And I love
the red punch she used to drink. And it is red punch, not cherry, not strawberry, red. Shout out to you, Sam.
I love it.
I don't. So Stanley, this is a Stanley red punch cup. Billy says, heed the warnings of your local officials. Don't wait till the last minute. JSB was an eighth grade recruit. Oh, man. It is drank. It is drank.
But Nick absolutely crushed it this weekend.
So I took a lot of heat for my Derek Carr video yesterday. Because I said Derek Carr did not have a good game versus the Chiefs. So I want your thoughts on it. You're normally an hour in, we'll touch on different topics. I'll stay on LSU for the most part. Do you think he actually played a bad game? Here's my thing about excuses. I understand New Orleans did not have all their offensive linemen. I get it. They're playing a bunch of practice squad guys. But there are times when I get so sick and tired of QB excuses. Like, if you're always making an excuse for a quarterback, then it's probably him. All right? You notice no one ever makes these excuses for Patrick Mahomes because he wins. Mahomes deboed the knee of his number one receiver. I mean, his best receiver last night was Juju Smith-Schuster. He runs a 5'4", 40-yard dash right now. I mean, what are we doing here? I'm not saying Derek Carr needs to be as good as Mahomes, but there are other quarterbacks that get over the excuses. Derek Carr missed throws, faded away at times when he didn't need to. Now, was he terrible? No. Was the quarterback ecosystem a good one? No. Is Kansas City a top five defense in the NFL? Yes, especially at night, at home, in front of that crowd, with an extra day to prepare, Steve Spagnuolo, and with no running game. The Saints running back room is abysmal right now. It is the shallowest running back room, and you know, they need another running back. They just do. Just Jamal Williams ain't it at this point, and I don't know what the hell's going on with Kendre. But you know, Derek Carr has been really good. But like anytime you do a video and it's slightly negative, And the title of the video is Derek Carr's Crumbling. He's crumbling. Now, I'm not saying crumbling in the way that it's all on him. Sure, offensive line is not where it needs to be. But if I'm paying you the $30-plus million I'm paying you, I need you to overcome some of this. All right? And it's not so much... And Samuel goes to a lot of games. I saw some of the Instagram photos, man. I saw you and your boys link it up. Good to see your wife there as well. This is what I would say about the Chiefs game. Is that game had more to do with the two games you lost previous. If you beat the Eagles or you beat the Falcons, the Chiefs loss is not really that big of a deal at all because you're 3-2 instead of 2-3. And in both of those games, you should have won those games. 3rd-and-16 tight end conversion won them that game. Then, of course, we know what happened in the Falcons game, and that obviously still stings. But, you know, the Chiefs had not played well all season long. Like, last night was the first game the Chiefs actually played well. But that says more about their team, right? They won those other four games when they didn't play their best. The Ravens game, they played really well, but Ravens still should have won it in the end. And they won the other three games, not really playing good football at all. And then when they finally play well, and the Saints finally play a bad game, the Saints had not played a bad game yet until the Chiefs game yesterday. You're 2-3, and they're 5-0. So, I understand Derek Carr is hurt now. We'll see if Spencer Rattler is actually going to start next week. There are rumors out there that he will. But I just get sick of excuses. I get so sick of excuses for quarterbacks. I'm going through it right now with Trevor Lawrence, right? My channel on Power Hour NFL has become a big Trevor Lawrence channel. Excuses every week from Jaguars fans. Sick of it. Especially if I start to pay you more money. If I'm paying you more money, I need you to be better. And I need excuses to be less because the excuses are in part due to your salary. Because we can't pay and have as deep of a roster as we can when we are paying you north of $30 million a year. And Trevor Lawrence's case is $50 million. Okay. So is Derek Carr still a good quarterback? Yeah, he's a fine quarterback. But I don't think he played well last night. I don't think he just played awful. If I had to redo the video, I would take back me saying that he played just bad. But he wasn't good either. I would say he was below average. What say you, Samuel? You had equity in the game by going all the way up to KC. All right. In the next 5 minutes, I'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. I want to get Derek Carr's QBR back up. I think it was like 60-something. Maybe a little bit higher than that. Oh, fall college baseball's around the corner for Jay Johnson. Excited about that. What is happening? You could feel the momentum shift in a hostile environment and never really took it back. I thought we were going to have all the momentum after that Alvin Kamara run. JW is in here. What's up? No, I'm with you, Samuel. Don't ever receive to start the game. I didn't really understand that. Oh, what happened to the Tide? Okay. Good question. You know, Kane Womack has not really been it defensively. I think part of the viral Malachi Moore situation, the captain who threw his mouthpiece, is the defensive coaching has taken a step down with Saban no longer there. And, of course, Alabama's DB coach, who was really good, T-Rob, went to Georgia. So they lost him as well. Some of it's that. Also, the pick six did not help. It was a lucky ricochet pick six. So, look, I give Vanderbilt all the credit in the world. It's also one of those things, and I know I brought up baseball, but that's a good example as an LSU fan. You go back and – so this year I got to call the Nichols versus LSU baseball game on the radio. All right. But it was actually not this game. It was a year before when LSU played Nichols, all right, in a midweek game. And LSU lost the game. It was like 6-5. You know, LSU superstar team. You got Dylan Cruz and all these guys. And LSU didn't play bad. They really didn't. They hit a lot of baseballs directly to Nichols defenders. But at the same time, Nichols made every single play in that game. If you go back and just watch that game, they made minimum three web gems. So Vanderbilt in that game, I didn't get to watch the game. Jared was giving me updates on it. Appreciate you, Jared. But they made
really difficult place to win that game. And they have a quarterback who is accustomed to these kind of upsets, right? Pavia beat Auburn last year in Auburn, and then he beats Alabama this year. I think it's not necessarily anything against Alabama. Are they as good as they were the year before? Probably not. Are they still really good? Yeah. I mean, offensively, they still put up a lot of points with 18 minutes time of possession. I mean, Ryan Williams still played really well. So, yeah, defensively, they've got issues. Obviously, had a kid quit the team this week. But at this point, I don't think Alabama's just this way, 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 way worse team. I think Tennessee's result versus Arkansas is a lot more concerning just based on how Tennessee played that game. All right. This is what I'm going to say about the Trey Harris situation and Any Lane Kiffin injury information this week. Y'all, Lane Kiffin lies about his injuries during games weekly more than any other player. And I'm not just talking about through his mouth. It's through his players' actions. They lie about injuries then. What makes you think they're going to be truthful during the week? But Sammy, you should go all night. If I went to that game, I'd be very frustrated. I won't go into the Super League too much, Pegasus, because I haven't been able to read the full Ross Dellinger report. I was busy doing some NFL stuff, but you know, what I read was interesting. Basically, a big crux, as is always the case with realignment and super leagues and all of that, is the distribution of revenue. And basically with the super league that they are discussing, the revenue would not be equally distributed. There are teams that want a bigger cut of the pie. And those teams, of course, are the teams that draw the biggest numbers when it comes to ratings, all right? And those teams are Alabama, Texas, Georgia, Ohio State, Notre Dame, LSU as well. I don't think they draw numbers as good as those guys, but you guys get the point, okay? So that'll be a topic. That'll be another topic tomorrow, the LSU secondary in the Super League. Decreasing transfer days. I am for, but, you know, there's a lot of things I would change about the portal. A lot. I think one of the biggest issues now is still the early signing period. I still think the early signing period is a bigger problem for college football than the portal windows. So there you go. We'll take a few more. Once again, if you super chat, we'll keep it going.
But yeah, it's going to show enough. How long does it take for the Saban effect to wear off? Man, I don't know. It is without reasonable doubt, though, that there was a real hangover from that Georgia game, right? You go from playing Georgia national TV to then on the road playing Vanderbilt. And, you know, it's – I always brought this up, and it never, ever, ever, ever ceases to amaze me. And no one really at ESPN will bring this up, but I will. And my dream is to do national coverage, ESPN, all that stuff. It is amazing that Nick Saban bitched so much about rat poison, all right, the rat poison, what the media says, when over the past couple of years, he has done some real rat poison things. Week before SEC Media Days, let's light a match, pour gasoline on the entire Media Days by starting a fight over NIL with Jimbo Fisher. A guy you want an natty with. A guy that beat you. They just light a match, throw gasoline on the fire, and get the media talking about both the programs. Rat poison. And then some national media members have brought this up, and I commend them for it. Because if you come at the king, you best not miss. The same year you say everywhere in the SEC is tough to play, it's tough to play except for Vanderbilt, while your team has Vanderbilt on the schedule, it's one thing if you in a consultant role say, hey, Vanderbilt's a tough place to play. We don't want you to lie, because it's not this Tiger Stadium, Neyland type of environment. But to say that, I mean, there are 15 other schools in the SEC. You could have said freaking Arkansas, who Alabama does not play this year. At least say a team that's not even on schedule. But you say this about Vanderbilt. When the team is getting ready to play Vanderbilt, you gave them the ultimate rat poison to the point where instead of playing music after the game, Vanderbilt played your clip on loop. The ultimate rat poison was Nick Saban heading into this game. Ultimate rat poison. Because guess what? A lot of the players on the team are Nick Saban players. Malachi Moore is a Nick Saban player. Imagine him. I mean, obviously, every single Bama player at least heard that quote at some point. They all have social media. If anything, it popped up on all their algorithms. They're probably like, hey, our GOAT, the guy that recruited us to come here, saying, hey, this is not a place we should take seriously. It definitely had an effect on the game. I'm not saying it was the reason why, but it did add some extra juice to it. It did. Okay.
One more thing before I go. Go, Pels, go. We are winning the Larry O. Okay? Big shout out to our super chatters tonight. Top one super chatter was Tari. Tari takes home the top prize. Tari, don't forget, shoot me a message, powerhourlsu@gmail.com. I'll ship you a card. And we also have Sibley, the Master Blaster, Jared, and S. Young. I think I did my best Master Blaster ever tonight. Another arrest for Georgia today. You guys know my solution to this. It's worth a shot. If you get in trouble, and it's ironic, a lot of Georgia's single-digit players are the ones that are getting in trouble. If you get in trouble and you wear a single-digit number or you wear a lower-digit number, anything basically the jersey number 19 and below, those are the premium numbers. Those are the numbers everybody will switch to if they open up. You lose it. And in the next game, you got to wear number 68 or number 43. And that way, everyone could be – two things happen then. You know, if you have to pay a fine, guess what? The fine is paid and people kind of forget about it. But if we change your jersey number, number one, it opens the jersey number for someone else to take it. Everyone on the team would switch your jersey number for a lower digit, single digit. Okay. And then number two is if you go out there and play when you come back from like a suspension or whatever, and you're wearing number eight and now you're playing and you're wearing number 43, guess what happens? Everyone's like, wait, wasn't he number eight? Why in the hell is he wearing number 43? That's an eyesore. It brings back up what you did, right? So everyone knows, hey, you let the team down. That's why you're wearing a walk-on's number. Okay. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. I'm telling you, if there is one thing that I will be correct about in the long term is that jersey numbers have a huge effect on performance. And it's a very underrated thing. And tonight, we're doing Buffalo and barbecue chicken, a little mix. Let's go. Let's go.